My guest this week knows how to repair a nuclear submarine, how to decide whether a new tech business is the next Amazon or the next Pets.com, and how to program apps for iOS. He learned that one just last year. Putting all that expertise together, he makes a powerful intellectual and financial case for Bitcoin SV, and he's launched his own BSV app. Welcome, John Pitts.
Hey, Charles, it's fantastic to be here. You're actually my favorite podcast to listen to. I never miss an episode, and I never thought I'd be on the show, but it's tremendous tremendous talking to you, even if it wasn't recorded.
You're listening to CoinGeek Conversations with Charles Miller.
Well, likewise, I'm very, very pleased to be talking to you. Now, I'll go back into your very interesting career history later on, but let's start with a very interesting article you wrote, which has been on the CoinGeek website and has also been on Medium. And you talk about how Bitcoin SV should be valued. And I suppose my question, you come up with a very specific answer or a set of specific answers. My question is, can you really value something like BSV, borrowing from the techniques that you used to value tech startups when you worked on Wall Street, which is kind of what you've done?
It's my belief not only that you can, but if it cannot be valued, then it probably isn't anything. And so that's how I really arrived at BSV in particular, because I skipped, you know, I think I first heard of Bitcoin in 2011. And, you know, I was a technology analyst and everything was fair game. And, you know, I did my analysis back then and I came up with the conclusion that it really wasn't anything. So when Craig Wright came back as and started revealing more about how everything works, you know, that I think was a huge help to people to understand what they could actually build with it. You know, what I think he's an expert at is security. And that is really, to me, where Bitcoin emerged from. He was marrying, you know, his sort of love of the internet and data with security. And it turns out that the way Craig has always thought of it, which went against his even his business, was that security is based on economics.
Right. So let's just go into that a little bit, because what you did was you added up the transaction fees that you were estimating the network would be collecting over a year. It doesn't matter which mining pool or which miner was collecting them. But when you put them all together, you come up with a certain value, which is actually surprisingly small initially.
Right. Well, the idea of the exercise was to put a little bit of a methodology in place where you could value it yourself. Now, I used 1 megabyte, I think, or 1.5 average. And if you believe that and the reason that's interesting is because if you believe that you're never going above 1 megabyte, hint, hint, BTC, well, then your valuation is maybe in the hundreds of thousands if you're lucky.
Yeah, well, the initial figure you came up with at half a Satoshi per byte, total value about 45,000 for the network. But it's not. But the story gets better. It gets more optimistic after that.
Yeah. So what you just quoted there was my estimate for what BTC is worth. So if you divide $45,000 by 21 million, that's about where I think BTC is going, which is effectively zero. And the reason for that is because BTC isn't using the most important thing about Bitcoin, which is the data, the information, the network itself to do anything. It's just trading ones and zeros around and pretending to call it money and hoping. And, you know, I hope that you think it's money and you hope that I think it's money. And that works for a little bit of time, just like Bernie Madoff works for a little bit of time. And the U.S. dollar has worked for even 50 years on that concept. But that concept ends. And there's many examples why. But to get back to BSV and the valuation, the thing that it tells you, that the calculation in the article tells you, is if you adjust those numbers and you start using 1 gigabyte instead of 1 megabyte, or you use 1 terabyte, hence the name Terranode, in Enchain's chosen name for their software, you get the very big numbers. But the important point is these things take time. They always do. It took Apple 40 years to get to a $1 trillion valuation. You know, maybe it doesn't take BSV that long because it's more important than what Apple has done. But the point is it's going to take a lot longer than people think. However, the valuations can be astronomical for BSV. So there's good news and there's bad news.
Right. One thing that I wasn't really clear about in the assumptions behind your estimates is, supposing there are a whole lot of very successful businesses built on BSV, then the value of the network itself is going to be affected by that. So the price of one BSV compared to in dollars isn't going to just depend on your transaction fees divided by number of transactions and so on anymore, is it?
I think you're correct. But there's a fluctuation involved. Think of it like a sine wave, where there really is an intrinsic value which occurs, at steady state. But the world's never in steady state. Mm. So when those businesses are really doing well and making money, then if you want to see my digital Mona Lisa on the internet, you have to, and it's on the Bitcoin network, and you have to pay to see it. Well, it's like a train where every seat is filled. You don't just get on the train and pay your flat fee. You have to tell grandma, hey, do you mind waiting, 3 hours for the next train? Because I need to buy your seat and I'll pay you double, right? And that's how the currency actually goes up. You have to acquire the currency so that you can operate the Bitcoin network. So it's really just a ginormous computer where the shares are the Bitcoin, and you have to obtain the Bitcoin to use the actual system.
But isn't Craig always saying that the number of units that it can be divided into is so great by the time you've got down to the Satoshi level that the price of transactions is going to remain very low, even though there are multiple times the number of transactions we have now? There's not going to be inflation in transaction prices because of a shortage of BSV.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we're already seeing it in the price of the Bitcoin transactions now is something like 2/100ths of a penny. And the way it's designed is absolutely brilliant and elegant. And that's correct. If as the price of Bitcoin increases and the value of the network is bigger, and it goes back to the article, as your city develops and gets bigger and bigger and more efficient, then the value of the empty coins or the land goes up. Right. And as that goes up, guess what? That makes the miners happy. So the miner nodes now are getting overpaid, and so they reduce prices, right? And they reduce it in Satoshis. But as they get more efficient, as Moore's Law happens and they figure out how to make the network more efficient, they can actually just flat out reduce prices and people get more for less. Right. And that's really the beauty of the system. Is what Craig created was sort of a perfect commoditization of information. So he took, the Amazon Web Services and the Apple iClouds and the Google Clouds of the world and forced them to compete in a system where no one has an advantage that they don't earn. And that what that causes is efficiency. And that efficiency reflects in the price of the transaction price. And so that's the beauty of it. In fact, that was one of the first things I had to overcome in sort of understanding Bitcoin was, well, this isn't going to work unless the transaction prices stay low or even go lower. And in fact, that's how it happens. It happens via the value of the network going up, and therefore the price can go down. I know that sounds almost convoluted, but that's actually how it works. So
right. Let's go back into your own history a little bit, if we may. One of the interesting things in the article you wrote about the valuation of Bitcoin was that it drew on your own experience in seeing real estate in Hong Kong. And you also told us that you were able to see real estate in Hong Kong because you were an engineer on a U.S. nuclear submarine.
Yeah, so I didn't get much time in ports in the Navy because the submarines are a little bit overworked, undermanned and overworked. But, you know, I got a chance to see Hong Kong. I rode up the incline, which is a great experience. And I happened to be next to this amazing Hong Kong man who was chatty. And he started telling me about why all these cranes were in Hong Kong in 1997. And it was amazing. It seemed like every fourth building was under construction. And when he started telling me that they were tearing down 60-story buildings to build 80 or 100-story buildings, that blew my mind. And then he told me the age of the 60-story building was only 4 years. It just, you know, there's a velocity of money concept in economics, and that blew my mind. And
that led you to a useful metaphor for valuing BSV as well. Just explain the connection between real estate and BSV that you drew.
You know, it's the buildings that make the city what it is. Otherwise, it's just a flat island of Manhattan. But when you construct a building, you add economics to the city. So in the example in the article, it's a little old lady who lives in a shoe and who happened to really did have a house in Manhattan, which was really rare. And when I moved there in about 98, and they tore it down to put up an 80-story building. Now, if you think about the 50 restaurants that are around that property, those restaurant owners are thrilled, right? I mean, you just put in 100 families or maybe even 500 families within walking distance of their restaurant, replacing one little old lady. That's a lot of economics added to the city. And so Bitcoin works the same way. When you put data on chain that's valuable, you're literally constructing a building on that token. And if that building is worth more than the token itself, you're raising up the value of the empty tokens, right? Now the land around you that's being not used, which is the money part of Bitcoin, that open land becomes more valuable. A 1 acre in Manhattan is an astronomical value compared to 1 acre in Iowa or, you know, in Scotland or something.
Right. So using the data capabilities of BSV will be the key to giving it value.
Yeah, let's say you're Elvis or something, right? Or you're the estate of Elvis, and you've got his original, you know, song in a coin or in a UTXO set. Well, how are you going to move that out of the UTXO set? Because Elvis and his estate are going to value that it's on the time chain, and people are going to access that. And it's going to have an income. It's a coin or a token that has an income. If a coin or a token has an income, then you can value it, right? It's just like a little miniature stock. And so as soon as that token has a valuation that's related to information, well, now you got, it's like the lady on the train that you have to outbid her to get off the train. How much is it worth, Elvis, for me to take over that token and use it for something else? Well, it's probably pretty valuable, right? That's like a skyscraper on a token. But so you're not going to buy the skyscraper for 60 stories and put up 100 stories. You're going to buy the little old lady in the shoe, or you're just going to find empty land and put the building up, right? Much cheaper.
Just translate that back into Bitcoin terms, in terms of startup opportunities for entrepreneurs. What are the implications of what you're saying for people trying to start businesses?
The implications are that right now BSV is very cheap, and you can acquire it for, you know, you can acquire 100 million tokens for what, $200. And it's like the island of Manhattan in, you know, John Jacob Astor's time. In 1834, he just went up, took his money and bought all of northern Manhattan. And then he put a 99-year lease down and allowed people to build buildings and improve the city, right? So that's basically where Bitcoin is right now. It is a greenfield opportunity, literally, where all these coins are empty. You know, there's things up on Twitch or Palping or you know, some of my apps where there's going to be information taking up those spots, and as those spots are taken up, then the empty spots become more valuable.
But I hate to say it, but you sound like somebody who's inviting me to speculate on the price of BSV, which is exactly what we're trying to get away from, I thought.
Yeah, I don't. I think there's a little bit of a misnomer there, where, in order for Bitcoin to have money, it has to have development, right? That doesn't mean that you can't invest in Bitcoin itself. It just means that you have to invest with the thought, well, I'm investing in it fully knowing that there are people developing on it. So for instance, you know, none of the great companies in the world, the FANGs or whatever you want, they didn't make money right off the bat, typically. Some did, but most didn't. But would you not invest in them? Because they went up about 1,000 times.
Okay, but so this is slightly against the conventional culture, I think. You are telling us we don't need to feel guilty about buying BSV now in the belief that it will be valuable, more valuable in years to come. That's okay. We don't need to feel bad about that, right?
I don't think you need to feel bad about it, but what I think you should feel is nervous.
Right.
Because, you know, that valuation that I put in the article, which was, as you said, 45,000. I don't remember if that's the number, but the risk is just as important as the reward. And I think the mistake that the cryptocurrency traders are making, and they're all going to be decimated, is they're looking at what could be and not what is. And so they're at great risk of another recession coming in, and all these things are just going to get annihilated, right? And so I think people are not focusing enough on the important side of the valuation, which is the downside, the risk. And what, why that's beautiful for BSV is BSV is the only coin that is actually establishing a ground floor that isn't zero. And the way it's doing that is by the development. And so if you're going to invest in Bitcoin, BSV, you cannot just do it lazily and think that you're just trading some kind of coin and, oh, well, you know, BTC went to 19,000 and that could happen in the next 2 years. Well, maybe if you're really lucky. But my experience has shown that a great thing takes a while for it to brew, right? And so you need to do the downside work and say, well, what price do I pay for the Bitcoin where I don't just get crushed in the investment? And so that requires work. And so I've always been, you know, I spent 20 years and I'm still doing it, investing, and it is real work. If you do it right, it's a real job, and it's a real job that matters, because allocating capital, think about all the startups that are raising money right now, even within the Bitcoin SV space, you know, typically the best ones are the ones that you want to invest in. And if you have the talent to pick out which ones those are, then you deserve the money you make. And so I don't agree with this culture that, well, you just can't buy BSV as an investment.
Well, just in case anybody is going to accuse you of being some sort of Wall Street fat cat who's just trying to speculate on prices, that's far from the case, because you have at least a couple of your own BSV apps, one of which is out, one of which is coming out. And one thing I was interested in, I saw that you, I think I'm right in saying that you have actually learned to be a developer just last year. Is that right?
Partially right, yeah.
You learned how to code for iOS?
That's great, yeah. That was the useful part of my coding. I started coding, I think, in 78 or 79 with an old Tandy and BASIC. But and then I had about 5 years of coding in high school. I just didn't think it was important. The only thing that seemed useful to me at the time was games. And, you know, I'd put too much work into my studies to think that I was going to be a game developer. And my parents probably would have agreed with that at the time, which was totally wrong. But
well, it's now one of the most profitable activities you can think of, I think.
Yeah, big mistake. Yep. But it wasn't that much of a mistake because I've always kind of towed the line between technology and business. And I've had an interest in both since longer than I can remember, even from grade school. And so I've been going back and forth my whole career. And so I started off in nuclear engineering, thought, well, maybe engineering's not my thing. It's not very motivating. So I went into equity analysis and focused on technology, did rather well. And then I just had this itch where I was watching everybody else have fun building these apps and that were changing the world. And I thought, well, it's not like I couldn't have done that, but I didn't do that. So is it possible to get back in there? And so when I came across BSV and realized that it was more than just a Ponzi scheme, that it could actually be real money and have an asset that backed it, I just thought, I can see the next 25 years so clearly now, and because I've seen all this happen before several times. And I always promised myself, if a revolution in tech ever happens again, I want to be inside of it next time. I don't want to be analyzing it.
Well, it doesn't sound like you really missed out on the last one. It sounds like you did okay.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but I did miss out because I had a little bit of envy there. You know, right. Like, why aren't I doing this stuff? It's got to be way more interesting to build Google than to invest in Google, right, or to build an iPhone. So invest in an iPhone.
Well, so now let's just, for people who haven't seen it, you've got Slictionary, which is a dictionary in which the user, including me so far, is invited to participate by creating definitions. And there is a sort of whole monetary reward and payments system attached to that. So just give us a quick outline of how Slictionary, what the business model of Slictionary.
Well, first, Charles, have you defined more than cookie?
I've done another one now, actually.
Nice, okay.
Yeah. I can't remember why, but for some reason I've defined the word clutter.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. I just was fiddling around and I thought, they need a definition of clutter here. So yeah, if anyone wants to look up the word clutter, I think I will get 0.0001 of a BSV or something.
That's right. However, let me just explain. So what Slictionary is at core a dictionary, a database of words and definitions. But the way I think of it is sort of a museum of words where the words themselves are art. And so we consciously chose not to populate the dictionary with definitions, which we could have easily done. There are certain open source definitions you can get. And that was never even a consideration because what we wanted was a unique dictionary sourced and created by the people, for the people. And the reason for that is creativity. So if you think about a traditional dictionary, you know, they hired maybe a dozen academic type fellows in Boston or Cambridge, and they got together and tried to really smith those words in a clever way to describe what everything means and making it very complete. But what they're missing is, you know, pictures. They're missing audio. They're missing all the clever ways that you could teach somebody what a word is. I mean, when your mother tells you what a ball is, she probably doesn't even use words. She just shows you the ball, says the word, and that's it. And so the beauty of the business model is that the wordsmiths, which is what we call people that write the definitions, can make the money themselves. We pay them 70% of the search fee. Sounds like nothing, 0.7 cents. Who would want that? Well, it's just like Bitcoin in 2009, right? Who wants a Bitcoin that has no value, you know, prior to Pizza Day? But if you think at scale, Slictionary gets better every day. When Charles Miller enters cookie, Slictionary is a little bit better today than it was yesterday. When I enter cookie and compete with you, which is another aspect of Slictionary, I might make a better definition than you.
And so you won't have a photograph of the cookies that I made, though.
They were excellent looking cookies, by the way.
Well, no, but a question about this, though, is, okay, people are going to sort of immediately perhaps connect with the idea of Wikipedia.
And they should.
And Jimmy Wales, when he was asked about the possibility of adding a sort of monetary component to Wikipedia via BSV, was adamantly against it and basically said it wouldn't work. I mean, so I suppose my question is having the monetary component going to make Slictionary more successful or less successful, and why?
Well, it's not just the money. Like, if we just charged a penny to look at a word, that would be pretty ordinary and not interesting. And maybe Jimmy Wales is correct in saying that that may not do it. But Slictionary has a lot going on behind the scenes. That's sort of what our picture looks like on the first page. We look like a very simple site, but there's really a lot of data behind the scenes. And what that data is doing is frankly ranking. And so if you think about Wikipedia, one of the common problems like that Craig has mentioned is, well, you know, my entry is one-sided, right? There's all a bunch of people that don't like me. When people that I like put favorable things in about me, they get erased by the people that run, you know, Wikipedia. And when people put negative things in there, they get, you know, accentuated. So how do you prevent that? Well, if you think about an encyclopedia entry such as just Dr. Craig S. Wright, what you want is multiple opinions. And so why shouldn't you have them, and why shouldn't they be ranked based on what people appreciate? And that's sort of what the money does. The money, what it does is it takes away all the bad entries and it accentuates the good ones. But it doesn't necessarily mean the majority is right. It just means that if you want to go a little deeper, then, you know, on our site, you just press the little side arrow and you can get the next step. Instead of getting Charles Miller's definition for cookies, you can get John Pitts's definition for cookies, which may hit you better.
Right.
You might be odd, and my definition might only attract a certain type of person. So I think that's what truly Bitcoin SV does. Is it accentuates the good. It values it in something where people can't spam it. People cannot manipulate it. And I think that's the beauty of the whole thing.
Okay, but a rather basic question is, how are you going to compete with dictionaries that are free when you're offering one that you can't get the result without paying?
Well, there's two parts to that question. How are we going to compete with the regular dictionaries? Well, number one, our definitions are going to end up being a lot better over time. And number two, you're going to actually get, if you just go onto those sites right now and you pick a word that's in Slictionary and then you compare the result to any of the top 10 dictionaries, the difference is so striking that you just won't, eventually people will just think you're weird if you use anything else but Slictionary.
Really? You think your users' definitions are already proving to be better than the professional ones?
Not exactly, no. I think some of our definitions are already better than the professional versions.
Right.
And my example earlier was just, you know, what's a better way to tell you what the word tally means? Is it, I give you 1,000 words on trying to describe this tally thing, or I just show you a child counting in a GIF?
Right. Yeah, right? So you're using technology like that.
Correct. But it's not just that. I'm making people compete on the word tally.
Yeah.
And so if 8 definitions go in, the best one's going to come up first. And the worst ones are going to be pruned eventually. So in that way, we're going to be better just as a sheer dictionary. But you asked a second part of the question, which was, what are you going to do now? Because you don't actually have all the words. So why am I going to be inspired when I'm reading a book to come in and look up at the word on Slictionary where I know I only have a 1% chance of getting the definition that I want? And that's why we built this thing called Word Bounty. And what Word Bounty is a way also for people to make money immediately. And so if you look up the word and it's not in Slictionary, you can put it up for bounty. And when it goes up for bounty, it goes onto a word list where for the price of what those searchers paid to search for the word, you can then write a definition and collect the fee. And so it's really an amazing little contraption where you can define once and make money theoretically forever.
I want to get back to one aspect of what you wrote about that I found a little troubling, and I it's a part of it that I don't really understand, and that is to do with pruning, which refers to the removal of data content from within a Bitcoin transaction. And I'm just going to quote one little bit from your article. What was once a UTXO with 4 gigabytes of memory holding boring old family movies on it can be erased, and the UTXO can be repurposed for shiny new data, which is valuable to you. Well, now, what I don't understand is I thought that if I was going to be uploading my family movies to Bitcoin, the whole thing about it was that they were there forever, and I wouldn't need to worry about them again. But if somebody else is going to come along and decide that they're boring and get rid of them, then that's rather troubling to me.
Well, the last, say, quarter of the article is more up for peer review, so I don't want to impose my view of Bitcoin on you or anybody else. What I've done is I've published it with the entire point being that I don't want to say that I'm 100% correct, but I feel like I'm on the right track, and I want other people to read it and say, either, hey, you forgot this and therefore you're wrong, or, hey, I haven't thought about it that way. Maybe we should all be thinking about it that way. And the reason is why you should actually maybe think the opposite of what you do about your putting your family photos is, doesn't that just make Bitcoin a big clutter heap? I mean, if every single thing can be put on there for cheap, for a 100th of a penny, then what good is it? Now we just have rebuilt Google.
I suppose what worries me is who is going to be deciding that my movies are boring?
You.
Really?
Well, that was the point of of that last part, which is if you're on the train and some guy comes on and says, Charles, could I pay you 50% more? Can I pay you $150 for the $100 ticket that you bought? And you say, no, I'm going to a wedding. If I miss the wedding, I miss everything. And he says, well, what about $1 million?
Right.
Well, you might give up that seat, right?
Right, so I think what you're saying is that if I had Bitcoin that I owned and had access to, which had my family movies on it, but the price of Bitcoin had gone up so much, then mm-hmm. I might say, oh, well, yeah, that's a good point. Maybe I will give you access to this for the massive amount of money you're going to give me, and I'll sort out my family movies somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think of the city example, right? I mean, if there's an area of the city that has a slum or rat-infested buildings, that brings down the value of the nice building that's right next to it.
I'm perfectly comfortable with that as long as I had a feeling that it might be some mining group that would be doing this decluttering for me. Whereas as long as it's under my own control, then I don't think there's a problem with that at all.
Well, I want the miners to delete everything that's not nailed down. Meaning if Slictionary is protecting your definition that's making $1,000 a year for you in 2040 you don't want to sell that. You want to keep it. But if you entered something in 2020 right now and it was junk and it was not earning anything, well, Bitcoin's deflationary money. So that coin set that you put it onto, which was just scribble scrabble or a bad definition, it's going to be worth more money in 20 years. So you may look at it and say, well, I'm Charles Miller and I own this, but this is crap. I'd rather just spend the coin. So you go spend it and it might be worth $1,000, right?
Yeah.
So that's what I view Bitcoin as. It's a repository for information that has a value to it. And the people that decide the value are you, right? You're the owner. The little old lady in the shoe, she doesn't sell because she loves that shoe. She doesn't care about the money, right? So she decides.
Right.
The mining company or the node cannot delete her shoe until she agrees. And that's what Op Push Data really does. It says, these are on the coins, and you're supposed to be the keeper of the coins. You're supposed to protect me. If I think the shoe is valuable, even though it sits on, you know, $1 billion property, real estate, land value, then I should be allowed to keep it. And that's what the nodes are doing. They're protecting those the information that is in there that people value.
Right. I just want to end with quoting one thing from your article that I found very striking. I've calculated fundamental valuations for everything from pre-YouTube Google in 2004 to gold mines as part of my career, and a handful of times bet my entire life on the analysis. This is one of those times I'm betting my life, my good name, and even my children's destiny on a set of research, so it was important to figure out how to value a money system as if it were an equity. And that is what you how you introduce your valuation, but I mean... that is pretty dramatic that you're going to, you really are, you're in this for the long run, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I was able to predict a lot of things in the internet and technology and that was great, but I really wanted to be involved. And so I've done a lot of research on BSV and thought about it from every angle. The technical side, the economic side, what it can be. And, you know, I don't want to give away my age, but I'm in my 40s and I've got about the back half of my life left and I want it to mean something. I think at this stage in life, you start thinking less about the money and more about the legacy that you leave behind. And, I'd really like to leave behind a body of work that my kids, my grandkids, can be proud of. And then I can hand them a little something of inspiration. And but also, you know, I think Bitcoin solves two of the biggest problems in the world, and they're very obvious right now. One is the problem of money printing, which is the silent tax. And number two is the privacy of your data. And we're seeing that with Facebook and Twitter. And, you know, you put these things up on the site and they own them. And then on top of it, they delete them when they feel that it's in their best interest. And Bitcoin solves both of those problems, and those are huge problems.
How long do you think it will be before not that dream is realized, but before there will not be any question about whether this is really moving substantially in the right direction?
I think that is best answered by the individual. For me, that was a year ago. For you, probably as well, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. For others, it will come with time. And for some, even later than that, when sort of the peak part of the bell curve adopts Bitcoin, as Craig likes to say, it's just plumbing. You won't really need to read my articles about push data or what is money. You won't care about any of that. You'll just know, well, everybody else sort of does it, so I do it. And that's the thing about an exponential curve is right now it looks like we're barely growing, but by my estimate, we grew over 1,000% year over year in the last year. That's massive growth. You don't see it because 0.1 going to 1 just looks small.
Yeah.
But there'll be a point where, you know, 3 becomes 33.
Well, it was exactly that kind of calculation in the growth of the internet that led Jeff Bezos to leave his job on Wall Street, wasn't it?
Exactly.
John, it's been fantastic talking to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, anytime, Charles, on or off camera, I'm always a willing subject for you.
Thank you so
and
much.
And I didn't get to ask about you. So what brought you into Bitcoin?
Many thanks to John Pitts. And if you'd like to read John's article about Bitcoin valuation and much more, there's a link to it in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and please join me, Charles Miller, again next week for another CoinGeek Conversation.